So there's a polarity and a positive integration of positive qualities that I think is very important, both in meditation and in one's life generally. And they're sort of connected with what we've been talking about and exploring in our practice previously in the evening. But one is control, and the other is recklessness. It's very interesting. We have a street leading up to where I live. There are some extremely reckless people, and you just don't know what they're going to do. They're completely unpredictable. They could get into a fight just like that. You know, they could jump over a wall and do something just like that. You just absolutely have no idea. They're completely out of touch with any sense of what's of common sense. Yeah. So I often get this sort of very direct experience of, you know, what it's like to observe someone who's very reckless. Now, actually, when I was young, I was very reckless, so I sort of also know from personal experience. The other side is very safe, controlling, working everything out, having a sense of measuredness of all the conditions, trying to work out everything, all the possible scenarios, and being very careful and choosing the right one. And the sort of in the coming in to the positive sort of counterparts for the recklessness, there's a sense of spontaneity. Yeah, and spontaneity is obviously really important, that you can just go, yes, this is good, I'll go with this. Yeah, this is the right thing to do, go with it. And it wasn't part of the plan. It's obviously important. But there is, in relationship to spontaneity, a sense of assessment of, yeah, this is helpful, this is a good thing. Even though it might not seem sensible to those around me, actually, I get it. I see why this is a good thing. The positive counterpart of working everything out is forethought and in a way, knowing the terrain, knowing the general conditions of things, and having some sense of how things work, actually. I mean, just speaking personally for a moment, I was always more on the impetuous, reckless, spontaneous side of the spectrum, and had to really train myself to think about what, if I was going to do something, what would I need? What would I need to know? What would I actually need physically? Who would I need to talk to? You know, what visas would I need if I was travelling? You know, the planning side of it. I had to actually make myself do that. And there was a certain point where they just came together. And now I do actually experience them as completely inseparable. You know, the groundwork and the spontaneity are inseparable. And I think that that is, for me, you know, personally, a really good example of the middle way. You know, one is avoiding extremes which are just painful and difficult for oneself and others, and you come in, and they're paradoxical at first. That word came up a couple of times in the tea break. Someone said, "This is so paradoxical." And I said, "Yeah, you've got two things. It's a bit like oil and water. The planning and the spontaneity, and yet they come together." And part of the process is patience. because it's difficult. You know, it can be it can be frustrating. You know, how do they come together? You go this way, you go that way, and then they don't seem to come together. And oh, what's the point? I'll just go back to my old default position. No, that's no good. No. So the patience is important. But actually, the thing that I wanted to draw out before I went into other primary qualities or fundamentals is discipline and spontaneity. I actually think that that is the real relationship. So when you decide to be disciplined about something, when you decide to do something, you do it because in that moment you decide actually it's the best thing that you can be doing for yourself. There is, you're putting value on the actual action. But then what happens is that another part of you says, well, but I think this is more valuable. I think fantasizing about that holiday is much, much more fun and interesting and therefore matters more. And there you're in it. You're in the crisis of, well, do you just sort of go off or do you stick with your discipline? Now, I think that there's a sort of model for discipline which is really helps, actually. And that is that when you choose to do something like sit every day, and in that meditation every day you're going to, say, for example, work on restlessness, jumping about mind. Let's say that is your discipline. It's a fairly common choice. Part of the choice is that you see the picture in time. You see that if you overcome the restless mind, that you'll be more settled. You'll be able to stay with positive qualities. The positive qualities will be able to grow and you'll become happier. And that happiness will be longer lasting and more steady because it'll be stronger, yeah, and more robust. So you have the perspective that it's worth coming up against the difficulty of fighting, even the difficulty of the restless mind. So the restless mind goes, let's go off. And you go, no. And that is difficult, actually, because part of you would like to go off. But you say no. So it's difficult. But because you have the bigger perspective that it's worth staying with the difficulty and experiencing the difficulty of failing and embarrassment that you can't count up to three and the shame of it, have to say to someone, I didn't even get to two, you know. Call myself a meditator, you know. And the difficulty of that, it's all worth it. I mean, it's just like a L'Oreal ad. Because you're worth it. It's just you're worth it. And you have to keep remembering that when it's difficult. It really is worth it. Does that make sense?
It does.
So part of the components of, you know, the basis of that is the vision that it's worth it, facing the difficulty of sticking with what you've decided. But at the same time, keeping the fundamentals of determination and perseverance and stick to it. And gentleness as well. You've got to have them both. If you just have the iron rod, it'll break you. But if you just have the feather duster, then there'll be no edge.
There'll be no dust.
You'll be chasing it everywhere. So, yeah, I, in a way, I just wanted to have that as a little topic on its own. And now to actually to engage in something, a different aspect of Middle Way. I think that it's very useful to get the sense of the Middle Way as having a relationship between different ways that you function all coming together. So we have, I'll just run through the basic functions. So we have a body and we have instincts. And we have instincts for all kinds of things to do with the body, eating and sleeping and so on. Need for hugs, at the very least. And then we have our emotional life, our moods, our ups and our downs, and how we relate and to our emotional life, and whether our emotional life is something that we're engaging with and in a sort of conscious way, or whether we're yanked about by it. But emotions are a primary function. And we have thinking. And thinking can be very, very useful. It can be can help us understand, to see a situation clearly, and to give us direction. And it can also abstract us and take us and alienate us from our instincts and our emotions. So in that way, that function becomes unhelpful. And then we have imagination. And the imagination, in terms of fantasy, gives us delusions about how we are that are just not real. But the imagination, positively, can give you a very rich and real sense of your situation and help you to engage with your experience. So imagination is important. You know, myth, symbolism, archetypes, art, literature, they all draw on the imagination, and they all give us a way of relating to things and ourselves as we are. But you think about it, imagination and thinking, they're like oil and water. They're real, you know, how do they relate? It's very, you know, sometimes it can seem difficult. And then one last primary function, intuition. Well, you know, sometimes intuition can be unhelpful in the sense that it's, you think, oh yes, this is the way to go. But actually, it's, what it is really is just you want to do that. Rather than a real intuitive sense of that has worked everything out and goes, well, yes, of all the options, this is the best option. So, all that being said, I'm going to lead you in to a middle way approach to being aware with all the functions. So if you'd like to set yourself up in your meditation. So the general intention is to come into a whole, rich experience of yourself. With a sense of settled relaxation and attentiveness. whole sense of yourself with relaxation and attentiveness. The body. Just drop that in. The body. From the most obvious qualities to the finer, less obvious qualities in the body. Coming closer in to the experience of the body sitting here now. Anchoring your attention, first of all, into your belly and abdomen, low down there in the torso. The whole area, how it feels. While staying with this sense of the body in that part, asking yourself, if I'm water, what kind of water am I like now? And being open to a water image that conveys how you are. Just letting the image arise. Having a sense of, does the image fit the experience of how you are? Coming more into the sense of the quality, if it does. Now letting the image fade away, but staying with the sense of the body and the underlying quality, whether it's whatever it is, just staying with it. Letting the awareness hold it. gently bringing the awareness up to the chest area, the heart, and being open to the qualities in the body in that area, in an open way. What's here? Just gently bringing it back to the heart chest area, exploring and staying with this whole area. And keeping that sense of engagement, asking, if I'm water, what kind of water am I like now? And being open to a water image. Just opening to the underlying quality of the image, if it arises. Staying with the underlying quality and sense of that whole area of your chest, but letting the image fade away. So in terms of relaxation and attentiveness, just ask the question in your mind gently and quietly, what do I need now? And follow the answer, just explore it. So you need more focus, need more expansiveness and richness, or more directedness. And let your thought give you the direction. This is the direction. So, in a moment I'll ask you if there are any observations, anything you noticed from that, but just wanted to, in a way, open up a little of what, of the way that I guided that. So there was a paying attention to the body, the qualities of the body. But then there was, although I didn't call it that in the meditation, the metaphoric question. So when I asked, if I'm water, what kind of water am I like now? That's a metaphoric question. It's asking for an image that shows you how you are. So, just as a little footnote here, this is very different from fantasy. You know, in fantasy, you're either the hero or the victim, or, you know, it's all usually rubbish. But here, if I may be so bold, but here, what you're asking for is, what is an image of what is actually here? And one of the really beautiful and powerful things about a metaphorical question is that there's always more than one aspect to it. You know, that there can be a sort of brightness and a stillness. There can be a sparkliness, and there can also be depth. You know, the image actually contains the richness of the quality. And it, once you get used to asking metaphoric questions in the context of your meditation particularly, it's a bit like that skill for life thing that I mentioned earlier. You can do it in any context. And it just gives you a picture of what's going on, and you get the whole sense of the whole thing just like that. You're in it. You know, you get it. So I asked the metaphoric question firstly when we were sort of paying attention low, and then again when you were up in the chest and heart area. So the question, I suppose my question is, how was that?
Everything you said, my initial reaction was utter scepticism. This ain't going to work. But then almost immediately, when you said, what kind of water? You know, what kind of water? And then suddenly, I saw this trawler with a fish tank, yeah. These tanks of water that was like seething with fish in them. And then when we got to the chest area, I thought, well, there's a waterfall here. There's a waterfall here. And so I was quite, I was very surprised.
That's a nice kind of surprise, then, isn't it? Yeah. In a way, the fish in the fish tank does sort of also convey that scepticism as well. It's, they're all swimming around, and what's here, and without analysing it too much. Was anyone else surprised? Not surprised.
No, quite strong images came up. I was surprised how clear the images were, actually. I got modelled when we got to the heart area, because I came up with an image that wasn't a water image.
Oh, that's, yeah. But did it fit?
But it fit, yeah. And then the final image was something else. But there seems to be a kind of logic about whatever came up. It was
So I just want to say something about that, going back to the thing about technique and pliancy. Mm. So the technique here, I'm asking you for water, and another image comes up, but it fits. Mm. So obviously you say, no, that's not, I'm not going to, you go, you're pliant and flexible and go, yes, it fits. Yeah. Any other observations?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised about my observations. When the belly, first we were paying attention down there, today somehow I'm first session we did, I'm feeling very grounded and calm. I didn't come even for the tea break. I was really feeling that I needed to sit.
Yeah.
And I sat, and it was perfect.
Yeah.
So it was very calm water, the beautiful lake, and very calm, clear water.
Yeah.
And the same thing when I paid attention to the chest area,
yeah.
the full of gentleness and calmness and loving and kindness was there. And the water still was calm.
Yeah.
Not something, so I didn't find the difference, this both area.
Yeah.
It was same picture for me.
Yeah.
That total calmness.
Yeah.
So it was quite, but that's the thing that I, both area I felt the same.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it doesn't that have
was,
to be.
So that was a little bit, I was surprised. But it was a happy surprise that I was very much there.
With
whole body and so. Maybe it has, it connected that for me.
Yeah.
Both the area.
That's the water I wanted. That's the one I wanted. Oh my God.
I think that that is very interesting when the mind says, oh, but I'd like it to be something else.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I've had an image and it fits, but it wasn't the image that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So then I have to let go of that. It's part of the process, you have to go. But this is the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Come into the situation and the awareness. Well, I think that the maxim is, awareness always makes a difference, actually.
I'm finding myself a little intrigued and maybe confused to a certain degree with my image of the water, because I actually had three different, very different images, and all three when I was in the stomach area, in the belly area. So I was wondering, and they all flowed. But they were very, very different. And I also had a sense of smell of the water, and even that was very different, because one was salted water and the other one was still water. And so I'm wondering, I don't know, I'm just wondering.
I think, don't wonder too much.
Okay.
I think that What can start to happen is, if you wonder too much, you can start to think, well, was it real, or, you know, was it just my mind doing it? But at a certain point in the practice, you need to go, does it fit? It might change, and then it's like, does that fit? So what, and then it might change again, and you say, does it fit? And they might all fit. And I think that actually part of what this can convey is that we're very multi-layered, and we sort of might be living at one layer, but there are other layers going on. And what's happening when we meditate is that we're shifting layers, actually, and the imagery can be conveying that there are different layers.
I just
need to go to the room. Certainly. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It seems to me, Rajat, that sometimes the body just kind of spontaneously produces it.
Yeah, sure.
I think that is our kind of, that sort of intuitive bit of us which knows what needs to happen.
Yeah.
It's, you know, intuition and imagination are somehow very kind of linked in that way.
They are, yes.
Into the kind of body's natural wisdom. That bit of us that already knows what needs to happen. But then to kind of ask the questions can sort of prompt that fact.
It strengthens the spontaneity, actually, oddly enough. That is quite paradoxical. You do something.
You kind of keep invoking the muse, though.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. But you also evoke confidence in the process.
I found is that the body, I never left the body.
Yeah.
The body really informed the whole thing. Yeah.
Brilliant.
I often have a bit of a split with the body, and but it was so, I think, I couldn't really, it took me a while to just kind of get, actually know what the experience was, because it just felt strange.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, it's because it was the body was really leading.
Yeah.
After what you said.
Yeah.
About, and that was new for me.
Yeah.
Because I usually kind of leave the body behind and go into this kind of, like, you know, place that doesn't feel very connected. I lose the body becomes so light they kind of lose it, but it's more powerful to bring it into everyday life, to really have that presence and that whole spectrum in this thing.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
I didn't get it. I was just like, this has just felt weird.
Well, anything, when something is new, a bit, it does feel weird. But I think that the little maxim always is, get used to it. If you're in that kind of new, oh, but it's okay, then just say, get used to it. And then you just settle into it. And then it sort of, in a way, becomes normal.
Because the body does things, you know.
Yeah.
It just does stuff.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes maybe I use meditation as a way to kind of make quiet it rather than allow it to inform the quiet.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is partially why I went to the belly. Because very, very generally, without being prescriptive here at all, but just, you know, very generally, the being in touch with the belly can have a sense of holding everything, the physicality holding everything.
Weighty,
yeah. Yeah, like a bowl. I mean, you know, we read it and we hear it so much that we just sort of, the mind goes, yeah, that's true. But the mind and the body are not separate.
I think the body really likes to talk to us and process, either in felt sensations.
Yeah, yeah.
But that process made it very easy for the body to communicate because you gave a particular metaphor.
Yeah.
And I don't know if most people in the room, I would guess, would be able to come up with some image because you specifically asked for water, and that's many different ways that water can be communicated. It's quite open.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's also connecting with the emotions as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's my theory. The body is crying out to speak to us.
Yeah, well, I think that's right. That's right.
And anything we can do to make it easier.
I was in a class at the LBC and we were talking about that in the group, and I had this memory. I did a 7 years ago. I did a 6 month retreat in Calabria in southern Italy in an orange orchard, and the local people had a dog called Luna. So partly because it was bonkers. And partly because she just looked like the moon, the sort of grey and black, and Luna just adopted me, basically. Mm-hmm. I never fed her, but I mean, she just basically, everyone just accepted that she was now my dog. Mm-hmm. And there was every afternoon after a sit, I'd go for a walk, and then one day, and she always came. I mean, she just always came to the sea. I mean, the sea was just 100 yards away. Like an 8-mile-long sandy beach, nothing on it. And we'd always do that, usually, if not something else that. And I walked out and I said, come on, Luna. And Luna just looked at me, wouldn't move. So I said, what? And she just looked at me, and I walked out. I probably got 100 yards, and it just tipped it down. I never saw it coming. I got completely drenched to the skin and went back, and Luna was like, what kind of idiot are you? You know, that was obvious, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was trying to tell you.
Yeah, I was trying to tell you. What? Come on. You call yourself a higher species. So there was that sense of, you know, the instinctual knowing, mm-hmm. you know, in that sense. I'd like to move on. If that's right. What time do you usually finish? I should have worked out all this before, shouldn't I?
I need to finish by 1:30.
Okay, all right. Bit of planning there that went awry with the spontaneity. care, kindness, it can be very polarised. You know, we can, on the one hand, be quite cut off from our care and kindness and concern and sense of connectedness and cold. Or we can, on the other hand, lose ourselves in someone else's need with an over-concern for others' welfare and lose ourselves. And our, you know, doing things for them and not taking care of ourselves. So there are sort of potential extremes there where, you know, it's all too much care and one-sidedly for others, or for oneself and not for others. So part of the middle way here is exercising the positive qualities of awareness of what nurtures, nourishes, strengthens what you need for your physical welfare and your growth and development. Now that is the really important bit in all of this. What do you need to grow and develop, and to take care of that? So taking care here is really practical in a way. It's not just a fluttery emotion. What does it feel like to take care of yourself? I went to see my doctor about a little thing actually, and he said, "I can tell you take care of yourself." You know, I was really quite pleased actually, because it was. I hadn't actually said much, and it wasn't just because I moisturised. I think he actually picked up. That's a Doctor Who joke, I think. that, you know, he picked up there was a quality there, you know. And I think that that's part of the middle way aspect, is that you take care of that. You're always taking care that, you know, your spiritual life, your growth, your development is taken care of. It's not just about survival. It's, you know, the development of your mind is also of primary importance. And in care for others, it's not just, you know, physical care. It's not just consideration of physical comfort. It's also care for what really, for supporting them in their growth and development, in being more honest and, you know, genuinely taking on what's there and taking care of what they're needing to take care of. So there's, again, there's sort of dichotomies here. You know, taking care of oneself, taking care of others, taking care of others. How do you bring them together? But when it comes together, you just know it. You know, it's just care, actually. Does that make sense as at least a basic idea? Okay, well, if you'd like to set yourselves up, I'll explore it. So coming in to the sense of direction, of a whole sense of yourself sitting here with care. Whole sense of your body and your mind, your mood, your energy, your feelings, being open to it all, being like a wide bowl that holds it all. Settling and attentive. And just dropping in a little question. What do I need now? What's needed? And just waiting. Just if any answer comes, just following it. For this whole process of exploration. Looking for staying with the difficulties and working through them. Supportive of that effort. Letting this quality of being supportive of the process of awareness permeate you, that you're for what you're doing, supportive of it, behind it, and you care for it and value it, staying relaxed and attentive and following what you need. Too much care and not too little, just enough that allows you to stay in the process of being aware and present. Bringing awareness, particularly now, to the face, again in terms of sensations and temperature, with this whole sense of care permeating your awareness. So you're caring for your teeth and mouth, lips and nose and eyes and ears, and smell. That they all work well. While you're aware of them. observations comes to mind. Good. Okay. Well, I suppose I'll end with an encouraging note. Reflect on what you've explored, what you've experienced over the coming days. And I would say that the maxim of make it your own. Make it your own. It's not an abstract thing. You bring it in and it becomes real. Get your teeth into it. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you.